I'm here today at 1776 here in Crystal City with Ileana Montauk. Ileana Montauk started a incubator in Gaza City, in Gaza. So welcome to DC and welcome to Frank's World TV.
Thank you.
And so tell me more about yourself and what you've done.
Sure. So my story is that I was a language geek originally. Mm-hmm. I never thought I'd end up in the tech sector. And after studying a few different languages, including Arabic, I ended up at Google after college.
Oh, interesting.
And eventually I was looking for a way to combine my interest in tech, social impact, and Arabic. Mm-hmm. So I went to Jordan on a Fulbright and worked there with startups. Never ever thought I would end up in Palestine or running a startup incubator, but that's what happened.
Interesting. So what made you think, I want to build a startup incubator?
I wasn't exactly thinking along those lines. What happened is someone came to me and said, we're trying to launch a startup incubator accelerator in Gaza, mm-hmm. and we think you can do it. Can you help? We need you to start in 2 weeks.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Obviously you accepted.
I did. And the minute I got there, it became the most amazing experience in my life. I knew nothing about Gaza going in, mm-hmm. even though I'd studied Middle Eastern studies. Mm-hmm. It's a little tiny place, 5 miles by 25 miles. Mm-hmm. For folks who are familiar with the San Francisco Peninsula, it's basically from San Francisco to Palo Alto.
And a lot of good tech companies there.
Exactly.
So is that what made no?
We're calling it the Silicon Strip.
Interesting.
We think it has that kind of potential. Mm-hmm. It's very well educated. People have the highest rates of education there practically in the whole Arab world.
Oh, wow.
Very strong internet connections. Mm-hmm. And yet the borders are closed, and so people aren't able to run regular businesses. And so unemployment for recent college grads is 70%.
But obviously the borders aren't closed for the internet, so that represents
internet.
An interesting opportunity, particularly for highly educated people.
Exactly. People in Gaza have better smartphones than I do. Mm-hmm. They're all talking about Facebook and how they can launch the next Facebook. And there's no reason why someone in Gaza wouldn't be able to come up with a great B2C idea, mm-hmm. and test it and get that kind of traction from a place like that.
Right.
Yeah.
Have there been any exits so far that have been kind of successful?
We're way earlier stage
okay.
than that.
Wasn't sure.
No. So the first ever seed investments, mm-hmm. were made in late 2013, early 2014.
Okay.
First ever seed investments. And seed investments in the Middle East or in the Arab region tend to be around $20,000.
Okay.
And so we closed those first seed investments in 2014. We had another round that just finished now. So we've run acceleration programs twice now. And we, you know, our goal, for instance, for this year was to get 4 more seed investments. Mm-hmm. And we ended up with an offer that was 3 times as big as we were expecting. So for the region, it's good traction.
Is the investment local or from the Arab world, from
it's
the
mixed.
Middle East,
it's
or
mixed. Yeah,
international?
The folks who have the most stake in the game and who also understand the regional markets the most tend to be local investors. Mm-hmm. And so in Gaza, our first investors were from Jordan, from the West Bank, which is also part of Palestine. Mm-hmm. We also had an early investor from Europe, though. And we see a startup right now getting a lot of interest from investors in Europe.
Interesting.
And the West Bank is just a few years ahead of us, and so they had their first seed investments not much earlier than we did, and they've already just closed a Series B investment for a startup there from the Rocket Internet guys from Germany.
Oh, wow.
I think it was 2.5 million or something.
Oh, wow. Okay. So what are the is there a typical startup? Like, you know, typically in San Francisco now, it's, you know, the Uber for X, right? Is there kind of, and in DC, it tends to be, you know, heavily regulated industries. Is there a typical, is it too early to tell?
It's a little early to tell, but what we are seeing is a very definite trend in B2C, mm-hmm. and that's for a few reasons. So B2C, online and mobile. Part of that is that's what's going to be easiest to launch from Gaza, mm-hmm. and to test from Gaza, because anything that involves B2B, there's just no market in Gaza. There's very few businesses,
right.
The market's small. And so if traveling to the regions that these guys need to travel to is hard, then B2C makes a lot more sense than B2B. Another reason for that, it's not just getting out of Gaza that's hard. We actually have permission now from the Israeli army to take our entrepreneurs out of Gaza.
Oh, wow.
And they're people in their 20s and 30s, and when they travel, it's their first time ever going more than 25 miles away from home. Mm-hmm. Right? But it's not only that, it's also getting into their markets. And so Arab countries make it really hard for Gazans to go to Saudi, for instance.
Right.
And so for that reason, it's much easier to get to Saudi through the internet than travel. So B2C is the bigger trend. Some sample startups that we have are an Airbnb for office space, an Envision app for the Arab world, so a prototyping app.
Oh, interesting.
We do have a lot of interest in hardware. We have a team that's prototyping an insole that charges your phone while you walk. What else? We've got a marketplace for Arab domains, like a Flippa for the Middle East. We actually had one of our first startups to ever receive investment was the equivalent of Uber, and she came up with the idea before Uber ever existed.
Interesting.
But then Uber moved forward really quickly, and she wasn't able to keep up, so she's now doing an MBA program and thinking up her next startup idea.
Interesting. So are these primarily Arabic language startups, or do they multilingual, or are they just focusing kind of the Arab market?
Where they're going to be the most competitive at first is the Arab market, and so we're focusing them on that.
That makes sense.
And there's some that are targeting Europe from the outset, or we don't have any at this stage that are targeting the United States from the outset, and we think that's probably the right thing to do. The Arab market is very underserved to date. Arabs really got online starting about 2008, and there's still very few products and very big gap in content. For the Arab world, and so it makes sense for them to be working where they're most competitive and also where there's a market need. But obviously, if a startup is ready to compete in another market, they should.
Interesting.
Yeah. And you got to remember that the kinds of people we're working with, so we're not just an incubator. We start from what in the United States you might call more something along the lines of outreach. So things like coding for girls or startup weekend competitions. We start by creating awareness of what a startup is and that you can launch a business even if you're in Gaza. Because what we find time and time again is that people are well educated and they have a great internet connection and a computer, but there's no jobs around and they don't realize that they can be creating jobs.
Interesting.
And so, for instance, the first woman that got investment, the one who had the Uber idea, she was a third year computer engineering student at the top university in Gaza and had never heard of a startup.
That's unthinkable from you know, with American eyes. Like, if you're a kid and you didn't hear of a startup, I get that. But to be a third year computing student, you know, using Microsoft, you know, hopefully a Windows computer, probably, you know, maybe some Apple products thrown in. I mean, at some point, you know, you have to think about those companies started relatively recent in history. That's just amazing to me.
What I think is happening is that, first of all, we assume that much more knowledge transfers over the internet than it does.
Right.
And we assume culture transfers over the internet, which is a big gap. So, for instance, in the United States nowadays, if someone wants to launch a startup, that's seen immediately as a positive thing.
Right, right.
In Gaza, if someone goes to study computer science, it's still often because they didn't get into something else.
It's the consolation prize.
Yeah, and studying business is just considered completely unacceptable. If you're smart, why would you ever study business?
Interesting.
And so as a result of that, you end up funneling all the top talent into medicine and dentistry and fields that don't necessarily actually need any more people in Gaza right now and that aren't able to access the kind of markets that this one's able to access.
Wow. It's just we assume many things in the States. But to assume kind of, you know, that doesn't translate or go over the wire, so to speak, you know, I can get that the entrepreneurial spirit may not, you know, it doesn't translate to all parts of the U.S., right? So, you know, by default, it seems, you know, people on the west side of the country tend to automatically own the startups. And I realize that's overgeneralization. Whereas on the East Coast, you know, I was involved in startups in Silicon Valley. In the 90s,
yeah.
When it was kind of like, why are you not working for an investment bank? Because in New York at the time, that's where the smart minds went. So it was always kind of this, I get that it's kind of not seen as the first choice, but I'm surprised that they never thought of it. That's amazing.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the reasons why you've got to have people there on the ground. You've got to be bridging that gap with the rest of the world. And so we've brought in people from Microsoft, people from Google, people from all kinds of startups around the world. We've brought them to Gaza, something like 60 people in the last 2 years.
Oh, wow.
And that's the way that we see that culture and that knowledge transferring the most. The other thing, you mentioned assumptions. The other thing that's always funny is that people in the United States assume that a place like Gaza is not going to have a lot of women's leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And so people are always mind-boggled when they hear that nearly 50% of our community are women.
Mm-hmm.
And in Gaza, women feel no stigma around science and math. They actually tell me time and time again that women are better at math and science than men are. And so there's a way in which I think the Gaza tech sector can lead the world, which mm-hmm. is in terms of women's inclusivity. It's still not translating to the women getting investment. So we have a lot of women attending our events and working out of our space, but very few women actually closing investments. So, you know, there's still some work to be done, but it's essentially a virgin startup sector. And so if you shape it as an inclusive one from the beginning.
Right, there won't be an issue of women in tech or women in STEM. So the markets that they apply to, I mean, are there a lot of startups that appeal towards other Gazans, is that the word?
I think anything that they're creating is because of things that they're aware of, and therefore mm-hmm. it'll appeal to other Gazans. But mm-hmm. we're always telling folks as soon as they arrive to be thinking of a larger market.
Right.
Because they're so aware of Gaza and less aware of others, they create solutions that might only apply to Gaza.
Right.
And so we encourage them to test it out there, but to be thinking of a larger market from the
beginning.
Interesting.
Yeah. How is the community at large receiving your efforts? Are they excited? Are there people scratching their chin saying, you know, maybe there is something to this computer thing?
I joke and I say that we're the sexiest show in town. I mean, it's sad, but there's very little positive things happening in Gaza. And there was a war just recently, two years ago. And I came back after the war wondering if anyone even going to care about launching a tech startup after what they just went through. And I found that our place was full and people were saying time and time again, we don't want humanitarian assistance. We don't want food.
Right.
What we want is a future. And so, our space is the only co-working hub like this
mm-hmm.
in Gaza. We just moved into it a month ago. Before that, we were in a little cramped apartment
mm-hmm.
building.
Village.
And we had to literally kick people out once a day and run in two shifts because so many people wanted to use that little apartment building to work. So we finally just expanded into a larger space. And apparently we had so many people who wanted to visit the space when it first opened that we had to create a regular weekly tour of the space.
Wow.
So it's very well received.
Very interesting. Well, thanks for stopping by to talk to me and having your event tonight, 1776. And sounds like you're doing great work, and I definitely want to keep in touch and see how things go.
Thank you.
All right.